With Montana News, I'm Eric Whitney. On the heels of President Trump's visit to Montana, we're now going to hear from New York Times columnist, author, and public broadcasting commentator David Brooks. Brooks is in Missoula tonight to kick off the University of Montana's President's Lecture Series. The conservative pundit spoke with Sally Mock about Donald Trump and humility.
President Trump just held his second campaign rally in Montana, and it comes on the heels of revelations from Bob Woodward's new book and an anonymous op-ed in your paper, The New York Times, both of which paint vivid pictures of a man, frankly, unfit to be president. It seems unthinkable that a politician could survive such withering criticism, but Trump is unique, isn't he?
Unthinkable is now the everyday. So I think what we've heard from the Woodward book and from the anonymous aide is pretty much what you hear around town if you talk to people who work in the Trump administration, that they have to work hard around a president who has little grasp, that there's chaos. And so the question is he dangerous? Is he ineffective and weak, or is he effective and dangerous? And I guess my verdict is the damage that's done to the social fabric and the way he divides is very severe. The damage he does to the moral norms is severe. The damage I think he's doing legislatively is less severe because I do think he is weak and ineffective.
How do you think he survives all of this, or do you think eventually he won't?
Well, he survives because he's got a tremendously strong following among Republican voters. Every time there's been a Republican candidate who's tried to go up against him, that person's career has been ended by Republican voters. So, and I think he has that because he does speak for a lot of people. The central mythology he tells, or the central story he tells, that a lot of middle-class people are getting cheated by the elites, is a story that resonates with people. I must say, when you're in Washington, all the Woodward book and that sort of thing just seems like big, loud, ringing bells. But I was just in rural North Carolina, where Trump has about 77% support. And there, these sorts of Washington stories seem like the weather patterns in Mongolia. They just seem very far away, and people either don't know about them or sort of write them off as just other Washington distractions.
Do you think the anonymous op-ed writer should come forward?
Well, I wish the person hadn't written it. I hope that there are people, and I know that there are people reining in Trump's worst excesses. I don't see the point in bragging about it and telling him about it. It's going to make it harder to rein him in the future. If you're doing a secret good for society, don't blab about it. But I don't necessarily think the person should come forward. I don't see what good that would do. It would just be one less semi-reasonable person in the White House who'd be fired. Some administrations, as they go on, the quality of the people going into them actually improves. I'd say there's been a sharp decline in the quality of the people in the Trump White House.
There's more to come, of course, with Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report, and Trump's opponents hope that that will provide the necessary fodder for impeachment. But even if Democrats take the House this fall, Mr. Brooks, it's Republicans in the Senate who will have the final say. And it sounds to me like you think that they will support the president until their base tells them otherwise.
I really don't think there's going to be an impeachment, or at least a conviction. Probably don't think there should be.
Why do you say you don't think there should be?
For there to be an impeachment hearings, I think Mueller would have to come in with an exact story of how Donald Trump personally colluded with the Russians. And frankly, there's been no hint of that. Maybe there's something in the report. Now, we all are speculating, but there's been no hint of him actually colluding with the Russians to rig the election. So unless that happens, impeachment's a pretty serious thing. It should only be done on, a real serious felonious crime. Now, Article 25 is different. That's removing a president because of mental incompetency. I don't think we're quite at that level, but it seems to me we're closer to that than impeachment.
The headlines, of course, focus on the president himself. But meanwhile, there is this ongoing erosion of trust in institutions, in government itself, and in the free press. And no matter what happens to Trump, that distrust and the damage it brings will linger.
Yeah, and that's, of course, predates Trump. One of the disturbing things to me is that if you ask people, do you trust your neighbors? A generation or two ago, 60% of people trusted their neighbors. Now it's down to about 32%, and only 19% of millennials. The younger you go, the more social distrust there is. And that's not because people perceive trust differently. It's because people are less trustworthy. And that's one of the things that led to Trump, and he's exacerbating it. But that's a much deeper and more long-lasting social trend.
Last year, you wrote a column very critical of the women's marches where you said, quote, people march and feel good and think they have accomplished something. And you called it a form of mass therapy that didn't accomplish anything. And you caught a lot of flack for that column. I wonder if you've had any second thoughts, especially in light of how many women have since become effective candidates.
You know, I actually don't remember writing those sentences, but I probably did. You know, there certainly has been a great mobilization of women running for office and veterans. To me, in order to upend Trump the phenomenon, there has to be a way to deal with the causes. To me, Trump is the wrong answer to the right question. And that question is, why do so many people feel alienated? Why do so many feel distrustful? Why is the social fabric so torn apart? And I'm always suspicious of one tribe radicalizing because the other tribe has radicalized. I think that does very little to heal social fabric. You know, the fact that so many more women are running for office and so many more people, period, are running for office is a good thing. But to me, it's about the substance and having some substantive response to the things that led us to Donald Trump. And frankly, I haven't seen a lot of that among Republicans who are unhappy with Trump or with Democrats particularly.
The tribalism you just spoke of that has developed is not going to be that easily solved, is it?
Yeah, I live in Washington. I really care about national politics, but I really don't look for the solutions to our problems to come from national politics. And there are cities and civic communities that are really doing great things. And to me, we're going to solve these problems from the bottom up, and it's not going to be led by a Barack Obama or a Donald Trump or one very famous figure with a bunch of followers. It's going to be a more ground-up thing.
Your latest book, The Road to Character, talks about, quote, resume virtues versus, quote, eulogy virtues, and that is, in a very simplistic summation, a material success versus values like kindness and empathy. And the book is, more than anything, a critique of what you view as a corrosive narcissism infecting the country.
Yeah, that book first came out in 2015. It's really a book about humility and moral humility and an attack on what I call the big me. And then, of course, 2016 came along with Donald Trump, so I figure my book really worked. And it's not only Donald Trump, but as a culture, we've gotten much more narcissistic over the last generation. We're the number one in the world in really thinking very highly of ourselves. And so that leads to a lot of self-worship, a lot of isolation. And it's very hard to sort of improve yourself morally if you think you're pretty great. The book is really about a bunch of case studies of people who are really humble and they were sort of pathetic at age 20 and made themselves into something kind of amazing by age 70.
At the end of the book, you write, quote, people do get better at living if they are willing to humble themselves and learn.
And to me, humility is not thinking lowly of yourself. My favorite definition is it's radical self-awareness from a position of other-centeredness. That is to say, the ability to step outside yourself and see where you're strong, but then also to see where you're weak and where you need to work on your weakness.
Humility seems tough to come by these days, Mr. Brooks.
It does. And one of the things that I get to do is I get to travel around the communities. And about once a month, I meet somebody who just radiates with a kind of joy and an inner peace. And they're usually serving others, not themselves. I meet remarkable people who are not only profound humility, but they have a sense that they know why they were put on this earth. They have a sense of certitude about their vocation. And so sometimes we get depressed looking at the circus. But if you think about your neighbors and the people we really admire in our lives, there's a lot of good news out there.
I've been speaking with author, columnist, and commentator David Brooks, who will be speaking at 7:30 at the Wilma Theater in Missoula. His talk is titled The Cultural Revolution We Need, and it kicks off the University of Montana's President's Lecture Series. That lecture begins tonight at 7:30 again at the Wilma in Missoula. Mr. Brooks, thank you so much for taking time to speak with us.
My favorite state in the country, so I'm happy to be here.
It's our favorite state, too, and we'll be happy to have you. Thank you.